right now, it's time for Oh, the Humanities, taking a look at humanities events and scholarship and research on the UNC campus. And we are joined again by Max Orr, who heads up Carolina Public Humanities. Humanities.unc.edu is the website. Max, it has been a long time. Good to have you back.
It's been summertime.
Yeah, summertime.
I've been on vacation, as I told you right when I walked in here today. I literally pulled in from the road. We pulled into Chapel Hill at around 4:05. I got here at the station, and it's, you know, finishing up summer vacation to do then do a fall preview really lets you know summer is coming to an end.
It's getting to that point,
for
right?
me at least.
Yeah,
at any
yeah.
rate. So, as always, Aaron, I bring you a date today, a tragic date, unfortunately. 50 years ago, on the night of July 23rd, 1968, in the Glenville section of Cleveland, Ohio, there was a shootout between the police and a group called the New Libya Movement, which was related to a Black Power movement, and a very tragic circumstance. There's a long backstory to it. Several people were killed on either side. Several people were wounded, but it kicked off 3 days of riots in Cleveland. And in 1968, also 51 years ago, there were riots in Detroit. The reason I bring it up, of course, is that we are looking at 68 this year. It's the 50th anniversary of 1968, a year that is really resonating still with us, you know, in terms of politics, in terms of some of the issues. So we are going to be having this wonderful seminar as part of our series coming up in the fall on October 6, 1968, A Global Revolution That Changed the World. And that's the date that jumped out at me and the seminar tie-in that I thought was the most appropriate.
Okay, yeah. I mean, 1968 is, it's kind of staggering that we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of that because 50 years just seems so long ago, and 1968 doesn't seem like that long ago. Because so many of us lived through it and can't imagine that 50 years have gone by, but also because the tensions, the issues, the debates, the discussions, they're very, very similar. So what we hear in 68 resonates today.
In many ways, you could look at 1968 as being sort of the inauguration of the new politics, both on the left, which became much more participatory politics, community organizing type politics really come out of the 1968 movement. And of course, that type of politics was adopted by the right wing as well. And today we see this, we're all kind of reliving the cultural wars of 1968. And if you look at some of the topics we have coming up, one of these is the legacies in the world of sports. You know, I know you've had you've talked with Matt Andrews before. He's going to be coming and talking about, you know, 1968. That's the year of the the Mexico City.
Right.
And of course these types are going all the way to today with our we've had several discussions on this show about the national anthem situation.
But I mean, in 1968 is the two American athletes who give the Black Power salute at Mexico City, right?
And so, you know, we also have really interesting thing with that. We look at the new women's movement in 1968. Mm-hmm. You know, here we are in the Me Too era, rightly so. And this is not a new debate, right? This is not a new situation. Of course, we can go all the way back to the first, you know, first wave feminism. But 1968 is another one of these incredible years of a flowering of the women's movement. So we'll be looking at that legacy. But interestingly enough, I think one of the things that's, we also, like I said, we look at the right wing legacy of 1968. Here's an interesting one that Don Reed, who will be speaking at this event, he's going to be doing a sort of a broad appreciation. And one of the things he contends is that neoliberalism comes out of 1968.
Okay.
Right?
So, yeah. So we're talking neoliberalism in terms of
economic policy,
right,
free trade.
Right,
so the
right.
idea, again, old stodgy institutions really show. So old stodgy institutions in this case would be things like the IMF and the Bretton Woods Agreement, which is sort of ties all economies to the United States economy. And
right.
So the big bursting of free trade is also sort of, we don't think of freedom
right.
in 1968, but this is
I mean, we do is the thing. We just think of it in very, very different contexts.
Exactly.
Right?
So, so that should be a really interesting seminar. And like I said, it's just a wonderful fall semester we put together with the interesting ones. I guess I'll point out a few. We have Gerhard Weinberg coming back doing World War II in the Pacific, and he is the Venerable Gerhard Weinberg has been giving these 8-hour marathon talks on World War II for at least 12 years. I mean, he's been doing it since the beginning of the program, but since I've been on the program, and every time you learn something new.
That's
every
awesome.
Time he's
how does that work, an 8-hour talk?
Well, it's four
split up into, okay.
It's four talks, you know, and there's time in between, there's lunch and whatnot, but it's just so impressive that he continues to develop new ideas and interesting perspectives, and people come from all over to see Gerhard Weinberg. So
that's awesome.
I would say, you know, as if you're looking for something to do and one of our real, I guess you call superstar presenters this fall. He's
is it
be,
a different talk every time? Or
it
is
a different
same,
talk. So this
like
is going
a different
to be,
aspect
yes,
of World War II.
This is World War II in the Pacific on September 8th. And this is going to be, again, on a Saturday, an all-day seminar. But he's done talks on, you know, just Germany, or he's done air power. He's done every individual country. So, you know, we say, haven't we done the United States? Well, we haven't done the United States and the Pacific in the particular reason. Yeah. So it's there's a, you know, the thing about history is we can constantly keep finding new lessons in it, right? New things to discuss.
Of course.
Do you like your family?
Yes, of course.
Is that an odd question?
I assume they're listening right now.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, of course. I do.
You
of
assume
course.
They
yeah,
listen
yeah.
every day, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
they better be.
No, of course.
That's
I like
a good
my
reason.
Family.
Well, is your family powerful?
Not, I mean, there are more powerful families. I don't belong to a dynasty.
Okay.
Put it that way.
You see where I'm going, don't you? You kind of get the sense. Well, September 21st and 22nd, we're doing Power and Ambition, Political Family Dynasties Through the Ages. We have the Medici.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Tudors. We have the Kecks. No, we have we have the Bonapartes. I'll be presenting.
I was going to say you're bringing up family dynasties. Yeah. I know the Bonapartes are near and not so dear to your heart.
They're in my
so.
Wheelhouse, yeah, but yeah. We take them out for the I don't know exactly for punishment, but we're doing the Bonapartes. And then interestingly enough, we have the Clintons and Kennedys.
Okay.
So I mean, a real very different look at families and power. And I have a feeling in that last talk about the Clintons and Kennedys, somebody's going to mention the Bushes
right.
and perhaps our current president's family.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
It may come up.
It may come up.
We do have a significant number of kind of dynastic families today, right, with the Kennedys and the Clintons and
exactly.
the Bushes. Do we have more today than we typically did? Because I can kind of think back in American history, it's like, oh, the Rockefellers mm-hmm. and the Roosevelts and the Fords, Henry and Gerald. And so I don't know if we have more now than we did before.
It's
it kind
a good,
of feels like that.
That's a good question. Certainly, maybe that might come up in the conversation. It's a good question because you wonder, you know, what is the effect? One difference, clearly, in all the ones that I've listed is we have a democracy. Or,
yes.
You know, well, the Medicis were ostensibly part of the Republic of Venice, but we all know they basically became princes. And
mm-hmm.
And the Tudors, of course, are a kingly family. The Bonapartes, a kingly family. So you might wonder, you know, what is the effect of a democracy in allowing access for multiple different families to sort of assert themselves and generations to be relevant even if
right,
their family
right.
isn't in power and whatnot?
Well, the thing that we're seeing now in democracy is just how much money talks. Right. I mean, if you spend significantly more on a race than your opponent does, that doesn't necessarily guarantee you're going to win an election, but it helps. Right.
Yeah, sure. So absolutely.
It's possible for a dynastic family to take political power and keep it even in a purely democratic society.
As an aside, I was just in Scituate, Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
and my wife's cousin's husband, I love obscure relations, grabs me, went on his dinghy, went way farther out and on a small boat, way farther out than I expected on a very small boat. But we drove by this massive compound in Scituate, Massachusetts, and it is the Adams family. And he says, and it's still the Adams family, and there's still Adams that go there, and it's impressive.
Do they still have power? Because I feel like after Henry, it kind of declined.
I don't know if
the
they have power,
century,
but they have a nice house. I'll
all
tell
right,
you that.
Right.
You know, political dynasties are good for something.
Yeah.
You know, it's
the Adams family really kind of hung on to a lot of power for a good 100 years to the point where, what, like Henry Adams, as powerful and as significant and influential as he was, wasn't he always kind of feeling inferior?
Yeah,
he hadn't lived up, you know, bit of an inferiority complex because he hadn't achieved the presidency.
Well, there's still a big deal in Massachusetts,
okay.
That's for sure. You know, so other weekend seminars we have, and you know, if you want to talk about any of these, I can give you some of the details mm-hmm. on these. But we have a really interesting one: The World of Tomorrow: Benefits, Risks, and Challenges on September 29th. You know, and like we said, Aaron, we'll bring in some of these speakers. But we have a speaker, Marshall Brain, is coming back.
Okay.
Dr. Brain, who is going to be talking about robots in the land of the future. He's got another spin on it. But also very interesting is the wild, wild west of genetic information. Information, ownership, regulation, interpretation, and manipulation. And Alicia Davis is works in the genetic counseling up at UNC, and she's going to be coming and talking about that. And I think that's going to get really interesting, talking about families, right?
Yes,
you know,
yeah,
and our dynasties and what we do with our DNA and who has control of it. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, will we be able to make the perfect princeling?
As that's becoming more and more popular, or more and more possible, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's an interesting interface, dynastic families and DNA. We'll see. That'll be next year's seminar. We'll get into that one.
Oh, I can imagine the logo. It's just like dynasty, but the D, the N, and the A.
We should be in a different field.
There
I
you
think,
go.
So.
Yeah.
Also, really interesting talks on what an environmental city will look like, and again, really interesting. Also on the weekend seminars, we have changes and continuities in modern Russian culture. Now, I don't know
if
you
noticed. Is anyone going to be interested in Russia these days?
You know, I don't know if you noticed, but Russia's been in the news a little bit. And what I'm really happy about with this seminar, which is going to be held on October 12th and 13th, it's a Friday night and a Saturday, is that although we will certainly have questions about whatever anyone is interested in, we are not focusing on the contemporary controversies as much as looking at culture.
Okay.
So we're going to be looking at Russian baby boomers with Dr. Don Raleigh. He's fantastic. What was it like to grow up in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s even in Russia? We'll be looking at, you know, literature, the effect of classic 19th century Russian literature on modern Russian novels and the interface between them. We're looking at women's lives and women's issues in Russia. And again, market economies in Russia, and kind of looking at, not looking at the headlines, but saying, well, here's a substance, here's a people out there. They're living in a culture, they're living in a society. As John F. Kennedy said in his famous speech in 1963, I'm going to paraphrase, but that no people are indicative of their government.
We
should not condemn a whole people because of one person, you know, because of a government or the policies. And so we hope that, although I'm sure we're going to get some interesting looks at Russian policy in this talk, we also will have a nice open-ended and fair look at Russian culture, which of course is a fascinating and vibrant culture.
I do think that's one of the kind of the fascinating things about, like, we have a tendency to essentialize the people of a particular country if they're in the news and there's a political conflict. I think we have a tendency to not even necessarily consciously do this, but just think like, oh, if there's a conflict between the U.S. and Iraq, or U.S. and Iran, or U.S. and Russia, and we think about the other country, we have a tendency to think that everyone in that country is caught up and swept up and engaged and active 24/7 in the politics. But there are auto mechanics, right? Mm-hmm. They get up, they go to work, they fix cars, they have lunch with their friends, they go home, their kids come home from school. How did you do? This is like they're just living their lives.
And there are people living the life from the mind in Russia.
Exactly.
And they're all wrapped up in whatever it is, their cultural manifestation, mathematics, poetry, whatever. You know, there are those people as well. And I think the important point that you just, a really very important point on that is recently I was driving with one of my daughter's friends, a 12-year-old, and somehow something came up on the news, and she asked very little sheepishly, you know, what do you think, you don't like, you know, the leader of Russia, but what do you think of Russians? And, you know, and I had the right answer very much in line with what you had just said. And she said, well, that's good to know because my dad is Russian.
Mm.
And, you know, you think that, the irresponsible language in which people can use and, you know, sort of talk about whole peoples and whatnot, it can really... you see that effect on a young child who's saying, you know, well, wait, my daddy's Russian.
Yeah.
And their daddy's a wonderful person. So.
Yeah. When you hear people talking about Russia or the Russians, like they're talking about a very specific group of Russians who control the government.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, what is that, metonymy or the other one?
Yeah. I'm going to leave that to, you know, it's summertime. It's summertime. I think, yeah, metonymy, what is synecdoche or one of the.
Synecdoche.
Synecdoche. Yeah. Thank you. It's my pronunciation of that one's never been correct.
I got that from Charlie Kaufman.
Not at all hiding from the news is Syria in Transition on October 20th. This is a dialogue seminar. And what we like about this, Sarah Shields is an expert on Syria well before Syria went into this very tragic 10 years now almost, or well, 9 years of this tragedy, 8 years, doing my math. At any rate, Sarah Shields is a historian and expert on Syria in that area and the era of modern Syrian history. But we're also having Syrian refugees coming as well, and talking to them about what is life like. What was life for you living in Syria? What has this transition been like, and what are your hopes for Syria's future? So, for all that we kind of sometimes go around the headlines, we want to make sure that we're also being very relevant. And I think this particular seminar is gonna really bring that home.
Humanities.unc.edu is the website for Carolina Public Humanities. We got Max Orr here in the studio with the preview of all of the things that are coming up this fall. So head to the website and get information about how to sign up for any or all of these, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And I'll just mostly talk about the weekend seminars because we have all fall to bring in guests and whatnot who will be presenting at some of our great books and some of our Humanities in Action lecture series. But coming up, again, looking at things a little bit differently, October 27th, Beyond Gatsby and Bathtub Gym, Rethinking the Roaring Twenties. This is a Saturday seminar with four speakers. And we are really looking at African-American culture in the Roaring Twenties.
Okay.
You know, the Harlem Renaissance kicking off. We're looking at, you know, what is the music of that age? It's jazz, of course. We are going to have looking at African-American art, painting and sculpture during the era as well. And a really interesting perspective on what the economy was like for African-Americans in the 1920s. So the not-so-roaring 20s. Our dialogues, I mean, our images are all around the prosperity and Gatsby and all of these ideas of life and flappers. And these here's this artistic production that's kind of underneath it. It's the music, it's the soundtrack of it. But for African Americans, this was a time of real transition, a time of finding power in art because the society is not providing those opportunities.
Yep. Yeah, especially in the 1920s.
Especially in the 1920s, as you know. This is a history of the Great Migration and whatnot, leading up to not so fine pastures in the north.
Yeah. So we've got to wrap up the conversation. But again, humanities.unc.edu is the website for more information about all of the events and happenings for Carolina Public Humanities this fall. Go there, find out more information, sign up for all of them and more. There's a whole lot.
Yeah, we got more to talk about.
Yeah. So to wrap up, there's a whole lot more. What is the one that you haven't mentioned? Why don't I just give you
the finish up the dates for the weekend seminars. We have a really interesting Bodies in Motion, Learning and Growing Through Human Movement. That's a dialogue, two speakers. One is a dancer talking about interdisciplinary dance, and another is going to be talking about parkour. So maybe you'll learn how to jump over buildings. we also have a really wonderful seminar on the Korean War. This is, of course, another one of these anniversary on November 10th, looking at Korean War legacies in with veterans in the United States, in Korea, and looking at the broad geopolitical legacy. And our final seminar of the year is going to be Global Crisis of Liberal Democracies on December 1st. And I don't think I need to say too much about where we are in liberal democracies and looking at where we stand all over the world.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, Aaron, we'll be bringing in speakers for these and other events, so we'll be able to revisit these and give your listeners better ideas of the dates and whatnot.
I'm looking forward to it. Again, humanities.unc.edu. Go there, get more. Max Orr, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Aaron. Thank you.